Coming Home, a podcast with Lane Kennedy.
All right, you guys, welcome back. We're on the show. You're listening again to me. My name's Lane Kennedy. Thank you so much for joining me. As always, it's so good to be here with you. And thank you for taking the time to check in and check in with yourself as you learn and hear from my fabulous guest today. I have the Miss Jana Roemer on the show, who is become a dear friend, a soul sister, and my teacher. And for me to say that I have a teacher is epic, you guys. It's really shocking to me. And I feel honored to have her on the show with me. Jana, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Lane. What an honor. Thank you.
Yes. So, you know, I think about Yoga Nidra, mm-hmm. and, you know, it took me a long time to find this practice. I have a meditation practice of over 20 years, and by the end of those 20 years, I was kind of miserable. Not kind of, I was miserable. Let's just tell it like it is. And then I lied my body down and, I listened to a yoga nidra and I had a life-changing experience. Mm-hmm. And so what I want you to kind of share as we open up this chat is introduce yourself and share how you discovered yoga nidra.
Well, mine's not a very romantic story, how I met the practice. Like you, I'm a long time meditator. It was fundamental to my mental health to be sitting on a regular basis. The kind of meditation that I was practicing more predominantly, I guess, would be like a Vipassana style meditation where equanimity was the goal and non-reactivity. And without realizing it, I had developed quite a strong spiritual ego where, you know, I could walk into any environment, be in any conversation, not be triggered, not have a big response, and just be, you know, equanimous with whatever was arising. And it felt to me like I was being a successful meditator. You know, the practice was working, and it was, you know, like it really was. It helped me in extraordinary ways to calm the undulations of my mind. Yet at the same time, what I started to notice that is in situations where I wanted my emotions, mm-hmm. I was not able to access them in the same regard. Mm-hmm. So, you know, bigger life events that should bring great joy or fall into some sadness or sorrow, I would still be in this sort of middle range emotional experience and be able to spiritualize everything without actually going in and feeling it. Mm-hmm. And by diminishing the emotional experience, what I was doing was not having an elemental experience with my life, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yep.
I was having an intellectual, spiritualized ego experience. I'm not sure exactly how to say that. Mm-hmm. But I was missing depth. And friends of mine who maintain their depth were like, are you okay? You know, like, is there an emotion in there? Do you realize that you're not actually responding the way that people would expect you to respond to, you know, news or shares or vulnerability? And that really caught my attention. So when I first discovered, the practice, the laying down yoga nidra practice, it was somewhere along those years of meditating. It was early on in those years. And I went to a yoga class where it was called Soul Flow, I think. And the woman who taught the class, she lived at the Bihar school in India. And so she followed the Bihar practice. And I loved her sequencing. I loved that I got a sweat. And then we'd lay down at the end of the practice. And the first time I ever did it, I don't know where I went, you know, the very typical experience. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I went. I didn't fall asleep, but I don't remember much past my pinky finger, you know, uh-huh. But then when they said, come back, I came back and I experienced a quiet mind for the first time. And this is after a long time meditating, you know, like I wasn't, there was no battle. Like the war with myself came to a sense standstill. And forget about spiritual ego, just my straight up ego was like, why would I lay down? You know, like even though I had this profound experience, I didn't understand why I'd invest my time in laying down and doing like quote unquote nothing when I could be working on handstands or backbends or, you know, going to study with, you name the teacher, I'm out there learning more about asana or, you know, an extreme meditation retreat or something like this. It felt to me unworthy of my time. I didn't recognize the practice's brilliance. And so that was probably 14-ish years ago. Maybe, I'm not sure actually, I'm really bad at time. Let's give it a range. Let's say like 12 to 15 years ago. Okay. And then it would just come and go, you know, like if I had time, if I went to her class, I would do it but I wasn't seeking it. And every now and again, I would be in a training and it would be incorporated, you know, a practice or two in the training. And as much as I didn't give it my time, it always left an impact. Mm-hmm. And I kind of sneakily started doing recordings.
For yourself?
Yeah. Well, no, like people's recordings, you know, like I would just lay down for a practice every now and again. I didn't really talk about it too much, but that was just the way it started coming back in. And I remember a very definitive day where I was talking to one of my dear friends and I said, I know I have to do a yoga nidra training and I know I have to do it with Tennis Fishman. You know, it was just like, it was like a lightning bolt through my body. And as I was saying it, I just knew I had to do it. And so I went from being very, very casual to all the way into a training to now I run trainings.
Right. That's it.
Once I got it, like the way that I understood it, like I think viscerally and elementally, I got it. So mm-hmm. It's like the opposite of the meditation. Mm-hmm. I wasn't using my intellect. I wasn't using my ration or reason. Mm-hmm. It was deeper than that. And then the practice like pulled me in. Mm-hmm. And then once I understood what the depth and what we were doing and the potential and the possibility within the practice, mm-hmm. I was all in. There's all no in. Turning back. No turning back.
There is no turning back, ladies. There's
no turning back. Yeah.
There's no turning back. And I joke a lot about this. Like, I'll just get to a class, just plug in. Because mm-hmm. once you do, the practice will pull you slowly and surely, steadfastly,
yeah,
away from that egoic, prideful place.
Yeah. And it just slays the ego.
It just slays it. I love that. And this, when we sit in meditation, I know for me, I very much relate to you in this spiritual pride, and this non-emotion and people saying, are you okay? Are you actually in there? Like,
are you a robot? That's what my girlfriend said to me. Are you a robot?
Yes.
I was like, right. Oh, that is such an insult.
Yes. No. Why, I am so spiritual. No. Meanwhile, no. So let's talk about this reprogramming that happens as a result of simply laying the body down, right? Because it took you, you know, between that 12 and 15 years and the practice pulling you into it slowly. What was happening? What was reprogramming you?
What I didn't understand before that started to become the experience mm-hmm. was one of spaciousness, mm-hmm. you know? And I remember sitting with a girlfriend who I used to go study with, John Friend, back in the Anasara days, if you know who that is. He was a big asana teacher. He was, you know, this global big, and we were in Maui and we were camping and she and I were just kind of totally sober, but like tripping out on the concept of like, what is in the space between? Like, what is in the space between a breath? What's in the space between a thought? What's in the space between two people? Like the space between. Mm. And I remember playing with space in the body, like getting you out of pain by creating space in, you know, joints or space in the body. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to intellectualize space. Right? I was trying to do space.
Not possible.
And what the practice laying down showed me was the experience of spacious awareness. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't arise from doing, it arises from being. And in that beingness, when the doing stops and the space is just the most ever-present experience, mm-hmm. within that space there is a ancient infinite intelligence that resolves everything. Like, you know, it's in that space. There's no push, there's no pull, there's no battle, there's no ego, there's no confusion even, because you realize you're just in space. There's nothing, there's ease. And so I think that was what the teacher then became, was the space, you know?
That is it.
And then what I learned in the practice was you could go into that space with a question, mm-hmm. or you could go into that space with an intention. Mm-hmm. And because you're creating space within the physical body, within the psyche, within the emotions, within you and existence, between you and you, mm-hmm. then it's like if you had a... Well, everybody can probably relate to their tangled up iPhone cords. The cords, you know how it's all tangled and you can't get anywhere. And then you just create a little bit of space in there and they untangle themselves. Mm-hmm. It's like what's happening in the mind was you get into that space and then all the things that were tangled become untangled. Mm-hmm. And then you breathe an intention into that and it reorganizes the wires. So then information can move much more clearly in alignment with this infinite, ancient, spacious awareness mm-hmm. that holds all wisdom of everything. Oh dear, I'm so sorry. I'm just gonna, you're gonna have to edit that. So I'm just gonna quickly tell them I'm on an interview.
There's no editing.
There's no editing? Oh no. Okay, hold on.
No, we're good. Because I was thinking about this, the space that we go to in the reprogramming, right? Mm-hmm. That infinite wisdom, that wise place that we all crave. Mm-hmm. We crave this. And so many of us are tapping into extra caffeine, right? Tapping into television, tapping into an extra glass of wine, tapping into more work, mm-hmm. right? Ignoring the space that we need and crave, mm-hmm. you know? And how can we, and some people are like, okay, Lane, you are, and Jana, you guys are out to lunch right now. So how can we like simplify this and make it so easy for them to understand that this reprogramming is not something that's way out there, right? Let's bring it like back in and understandable for someone who's like brand new to this, right? Who's like, I thought yoga was stretching.
Yeah. Well, this is conscious napping.
Yeah. Conscious napping. Like that's so right. Even that statement alone is like, oh, napping. That sounds good.
Yeah. Deep rest.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Deep rest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe understanding that every one of us sees the world through a particular understanding or belief. Mm-hmm. And these beliefs are created, crafted, molded, ingrained through experience.
Yes.
And yes. Our biggest, most influential beliefs are often the hardest to see. Mm-hmm. And they're hard to see because they've been with us from the beginning of our life. So we adopt them from our parents, or perhaps the voice of a parent becomes the inner voice that seems like our own, or a belief such as I'm meant to suffer this life, you know, or I'm unworthy of, of greatness, or, you know, people also have beliefs that they are entitled to everything, you know, like whatever it is, there are these beliefs. And, when you are able to sit with yourself in such a way that you can hear your inner, sorry, I don't know why, and I can't turn it off. It says it's on. It, once you can see the program that's running or the belief that's there, then we can start to work with it. And in the practice, because we go underneath the analytical mind, the mind actually becomes quite a bit more suggestible. And so if I'm able to identify that I have a belief that validation only comes from approval from others, and I can see that, so I'm never self-validating, then I can use within the practice a sankalpa or an intention or a vow to myself that says I am valid, which would then start to shape that belief. And it works at a neurological level, you know, like this is the neural networks of our brains, and they reorganize in such a way that you actually see the world differently. So where once I was scanning for all the reasons why I needed external validation, now I'm scanning for how I'm being validated constantly. So it just changes the lens through how you see the world. And when that happens, then your whole world changes.
Everything changes. Everything changes. When that neural pathway changes, bing, everything changes. And I like that belief, because so many of us have, we come in, I mean, I have a 9-year-old and I'm watching his belief system, right? I'm watching how he is operating in the world. And I'm comparing it to, which, you know, not supposed to do that, but lo and behold, how it's different than my belief system.
Absolutely.
And everybody, again, I'm just saying, like, everybody has these belief systems, and like, I am not enough is a belief system that so many women have.
Yeah.
And this practice, getting underneath that analytical mind, that analytical thinking, and changing that statement to I am enough, changes the way a woman walks in the world. And I've seen this happen with some of my students. And it doesn't make sense to me, because I want it to make sense, but the science of it makes sense. When I look at how the neurotransmitters are changing my emotions, they're changing the way that I react. They're changing the way that I then do things. So when I look at the science, because I'm, you know, biohacker here, 20 years, like, yay, go science. When I start looking at how the brain actually operates from the top down, how that brain is functioning, I'm like, oh, okay, this is science. It's working. It's working, right? So when we go underneath this analytical mind and we start to reprogram with the sankalpa and this intention, right? We become new people. And this practice is effortless.
It's an alignment.
It's realignment to the truth of who you are, which I had no idea.
I know. It clears away a lot of debris. And if we, let's just imagine that we have layers like an onion. It's like before the practice, the layers of the onion are not lined up. And after the practice, the layers all come in and you get to see that perfect onion, you know, where they're just, they're still there. You still have these layers of self, but now you've spent time in the layers of the self to get to know them enough. And they're communicating with each other in such a way that there's less confusion. And so then that alignment, it's the alignment to the practice, but it's also the alignment to the wisdom of this practice. And there's an alignment to an ancient stream of consciousness that is really the backdrop and foundation of absolutely everything in existence. And it brings us back into that place of wholeness. And when we feel whole, you could never not feel like you're enough if you feel whole.
Right.
You know? And that wholeness is to have a departure from wholeness creates all types of fractures within our personality, our emotions, our psyche, our sense of belonging, our sense of safety, But when we heal those fractures and we find that returning to wholeness that isn't just within ourselves, but also with this greater consciousness that is all of existence, all things in existence, then we know fundamentally, elementally, that we belong. We know fundamentally, elementally, that we're safe. We also know that we have purpose. You know, it lines everything up. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny to talk about it because you can't explain it.
Yeah, no.
Because it is an experience. It's like if I had a fruit, like a strawberry, and you'd never had a strawberry before, and I could explain it to you, I could tell you the color and the texture and the taste, and you might say, well, is it kind of like a pomegranate? Well, it's red like a pomegranate, but it's a different texture. Mm-hmm. Well, is it like a raspberry? Well, it's kind of like a raspberry, but it's a different texture. And it's like, just Lane, take a bite of the strawberry.
Take a bite.
Take a bite of the strawberry. And then the second you taste the strawberry, you're like, oh, that's what a strawberry tastes like.
Right.
But until you bite it, I can try and I'm going to miss. And miss and miss and miss and miss and miss until you bite it.
Until you bite it. Until
you bite the practice.
Into that position to experience it, because it is it's an experience. It's a practice that we allow ourselves to experience. And I just want to talk about this collective consciousness for a minute, because I had a class last night and I typically put them in a half moon position. Mm-hmm. And with their heads in the center. And last night I said, let's get closer. Mm. Let's get in here and get tight. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like when we're close, there's some kind of magic consciousness that happens here. And so we did the practice. And they said, whoa. Afterwards, they were like, I could feel everything else that was going on in the room. This is so much better when we're closer. Mm-hmm. Like we took it to the next level, Lane.
Yeah.
And so there is something about this collective consciousness that happens when we find a teacher that we can go to and be with and experience that. Have you found that as well?
Well, I mean, there's actually an explanation for this because we're electrical beings, you know, and this practice is working with the nervous system. And so the initiation into the practice is to get the nervous system, your personal nervous system, humming at a coherent rate or incoherence. Mm-hmm. So what happens when you get the nervous system coherent is, instead of your attention being pulled in 10,000 different directions, thinking about your mom and your dog and your emails and your Instagram and your food and your whatever, all the things that you're thinking about, all of that stuff is dropped for enough time that you can focus all of your attention inward on yourself. And when all of your attention comes inward and the nervous system is now focusing on one thing instead of the 10,000 things, this coherent state actually amplifies the strength of your nervous system. Mm-hmm. And the nervous system is cueing your endocrine system or your hormonal chemical systems. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, then the way that the nervous system is able to cue your digestion and your chemical systems, then you start to receive healing. And I'll say radiance, but if I want to be nerdy about it, we could say the electromagnetic field of your body grows. Yes. So the radiance of the electromagnetic field of your body expands. And so when we're doing this together, and let's say you have 15 people in the room, and those 15 people, let's just say one of them is having a really hard time, and the other 14 are having a really good coherent experience, their electromagnetic fields, the 14 that are going in deep, will tune the 15th one that's having a hard time into a coherent experience where like it's like the strength of the collective nervous system mm-hmm. gives the one challenged nervous system mm-hmm. no choice but to tune into this shared frequency. Yes. And I think that's where the real power of collective practice comes from, is when we're doing it together mm-hmm. and there's a guide who knows how to create that coherence. And that guide is also creating coherence. They're leading the way by going into a coherent state in their own body.
Yeah.
And then everybody in the room comes together. And now you've got this even greater collective electromagnetic field mm-hmm. aligning with one smooth current moving through everybody. And, you know, they've done studies. I mean, back to meditation. I don't want to diss meditation. I think meditation has a great role in our existence. I think that we think of it like the masculine, the feminine. You know, meditation is masculine, this is feminine. They've done these studies where they've shown that a group of meditators can influence the consciousness of a city, like reducing crime rates even in a city with these studies. So, it's actually been proven that we are coming together like this. Mm-hmm. So group practice, public practice is where it's at.
So you said something about knowing a guide or
having a guide.
Having a guide or how does one find that guide? Right? Like I find it such a challenge. I don't even know how to express this conversation, but you know, when I go on Insight Timer, I can put the little ear pods on and I can listen to the frequency and the tone of the person who's guiding in a nanosecond. And I'll know if I can be on that practice. Yeah. Seriously. Like, but I don't know if I'm walking into a space, right? So how do we share this information? How do we kind of pass on? How do you find a guide? How do you?
Well, I'm going to answer this in two parts, okay? Yeah. I'm going to start with, first of all, it's really important to find a guide that actually knows what we're doing, because we are going into such a vulnerable state. When you lay yourself down and you lay down the ego and you lay down the analytical mind and you let somebody's voice go into the depth of your psyche and into the subconscious mind, in this state, we become more susceptible and suggestible. Yes. And so I want to know that the morale, like the values and the moral of the person guiding me, first of all, are in alignment with mine. Mm-hmm. And then I also want to know that they understand what they're doing.
Yes.
Because we can get people into deep relaxation and program the mind. I think about all the people that fall asleep with the TV on.
Oh,
you know, and like you're going, you're actually that journey into sleep, you're so suggestible. And so we're allowing ourselves to be reprogrammed by television. Mm-hmm. You know, what's going on TV, this program is literally programming us. So yes, finding a guide that actually knows the practice and understands the psychology, the neuroscience of the practice. Like one of my little taglines on my things is, this is where the ancient meets the quantum. Mm-hmm. And so understanding the tradition and the ancientness of the practice, but also understanding, you know, current cutting edge neuroscience and how the mind and the psyche works, I think is very important. So I think identifying and knowing that your teachers are trained. Then second, I think that it really, studios need to be holding the practice sacred, that they're only hiring teachers that have been trained. And I would say this is not happening across the board where they're like, oh yeah, it's just deep relaxation, lay down and breathe. And like, I've had quite a few conversations with colleagues where it's like, no, we need people that are properly trained. And then, so I think doing research on your teacher is a good idea. And I think as a teacher, it's really good to put on your website, like, this is where I've studied. These are my teachers. This is my perspective on the practice, so that people can go in and see like, okay, this is actually a well-trained, researched, scientifically backed, like ancient practice versus somebody who has not done any training is going to have you breathe and say some things. Both are actually great. I'll be honest. To have somebody to be able to guide you in deep rest is great because we have a underslept, overstressed society. And any opportunity to rest deeply is going to be magnificent. Where it gets a little bit sticky is where there's suggestions going into the practice without understanding how that's actually working on the psyche.
Right.
So, yeah, that would be my first thing is research the teachers.
Yeah. I can't agree with you more of just really knowing where the teacher comes from and learning about them. It's so important because we are going so deep. And I tell people this too. They're like, oh, it's just like meditation. I'm like, no, you don't understand. We are going so deep. I can't have anybody walking in on this class. I can't have somebody clinking dishes in the background or whatever. Like, no. They're like, why? And I'm like, because we're going to a different dimension. You know, like, yeah, I don't know how. I'm like, trust me on this. Yeah. But really understanding the psyche and the science of it, right? Yeah. One of the things I love about your practice is that you bring in the astrology. Mm. And if you would have told me this a year ago, I would have been laughing. I would be talking about astrology, and I talk about this on the podcast, but you know, I'm like, I've like, you know, kind of converted into learning a little more. But one of the magical practices that I first did was an Aries practice with you. Mm. And that practice blew me away. How did you find Astro Nidra? Like, how did that happen?
So I have been studying astrology for a really, really long time. And one of the things that I had been doing for quite some time for fun is blogging about the moons or bringing the teachings of the moon into my public yoga classes. And what I started to notice was that if I did my Nidra practice before I did the astrology, I was getting a lot of the information. So I would do my yoga nidra practice, and then I would journal, and then the things that were coming up later on, I would do the write up on the moon, and I'd be like, wait, the same things are coming up. So I'm connecting to something here that is just existing. I'm just tapping into something that's already existing. And so then I started to experiment and play with, could I connect to something bigger through the practice? And when I first did my yoga nidra training with Tanis, my first training ever, Tanis Fishman. Mm-hmm. She had us hand in a script, and my first script, I'm actually going to record it. I never recorded it, but I'm actually going to record it because it was to attune to the moon. And I'm going to make it like the intro, like free offering to the whole Astro Nidra concept, because it really opened it. It opens it. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm looking at with the practice is how do we recognize, first of all, that with all the division in the world, all the separation, all the polarized opinions about everything, the only thing that we truly have in common is that we're standing on the same earth, we're revolving around the same sun, and we're looking at the same moon. And it doesn't matter where you are in the world, those three things are the same.
Yep.
And they're cyclical, and they have their own teachings. And so I look at them as luminaries. And the word luminary is often used as a teacher. You know, these are our luminaries. It's something so much bigger than ourselves that we can't quite explain, but that is uniting us. Mm-hmm. And so then I started to just put in the practice what the teachings of the astrology were, and letting that be the theme of the yoga nidra practice. And then I just call them Astro Nidra. I started and I haven't stopped.
They're so beautiful. Okay, you guys. So I really want to just say that you don't have to be into astrology, right?
You don't.
Like, you don't. It's just what I have discovered over the last, I don't even know, 7, 9, 10, 12 months that I've done them, mm-hmm. is that it slips underneath that mind, that analytical mind, and helps me see the world a little bit differently, mm-hmm. using the stars and the moon, using this astro stuff.
Well, so. And even if you don't believe, like, I love that you say you don't need to believe in astrology, because over the course of the year, what happens is you look at 12 different areas of your life. Mm-hmm. And if you look at those 12 different areas of your life, and you know, the practice is one of self-observation.
Yeah.
So if I say, you know, right now while we're recording, I don't know when this will be published, but we're in Libra season. And part of the teachings of Libra season are this restoration of balance or returning to balance. Mm-hmm. And so the practice, I'm not like the sun, the moon, and Jupiter and Venus in the, I don't put that in the practice. I only put self-observation of your own uh-huh. sense of balance uh-huh. with a recognition that we're probably out of balance somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so here, what's happening on one side, and then what's the polar opposite of the other, and how can we return balance to that? And I mean, we all can use that, yep. right? And in Virgo season, I mean, there's a couple different themes, but one that I used was how you could serve another,
yes.
you know, and how am I here to be of service to the world? And it's a question.
That practice got me all up in my, I was just like, whew, flying with that one.
Yeah, it's a question. And it's yeah. a great question to ask. Oh,
so heavy.
And Scorpio season, it's actually amazing because Elaine just did a course with me where the topic ended up being grief on one of the days. And it's so funny to me because the questions were coming from the group, but the Scorpio season nature that I've already recorded is all about grief because, you know, Scorpio is the underworld and it's transformation and it's death and it's rebirth and it's, you know, that dark night of the soul. And grief is a major emotion that I think everybody yep. has knocked on the door or run away from or dove in deep, you know, like yep. grief is something we cannot get away from grief. We try, yep. you know, but actually feeling grief will heal a lot. And I was reading, one of my teachers, was talking about grief on her email lately because one of her grandparents just passed away. And she said, maybe grief is, I'm not doing this exactly right, but she said, maybe grief is the gateway that allows all emotions to run through. Mm. You know, like there's no emotion that is exempt from yep. the grieving process.
Yep.
And it's like, it like cleans the slate. Mm-hmm. And so, but I'm not going to be like Scorpio season, blah, 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 blah in the practice. Mm-hmm. It just then provides this opportunity and a timing mm-hmm. that we then collectively together, like this community of people that are doing the Astro Nidras, people are downloading the practices in 68 different countries. So and amazing. So the people in 68 different countries at the same time, yep. are going to be right now working with restoring balance.
Yes.
And then you get yourself to a place of restored balance where now you feel much safer within yourself. Yep. And then we're going to walk into allowing ourselves to grieve from a more balanced place. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And like the, what you were saying about in the public class, when we get these people together, closer together, doing the same practice, how it has an effect. Well, when we're in the world, you know, we could have 10,000 people practicing Yoga Nidra on different themes, and it's not going to have the same effect as if we have 600 people practicing on the same theme yes. all over the world, because it creates a collective coherence that, you know, you doing the work and me doing the work and Charlie down the street doing the work and Savannah in, you know, like across the planet doing the work and, you know, all these little like little pins, you yep, know, like yep, just little yep. markers on the earth. When we collectively do it, we'll actually go deeper with each other because we're sharing a practice.
Right.
So
we're shifting that collective consciousness, which together. The world needs right now. Right.
Yeah.
And I, the visual that I just got, Jana, was like the globe, right? Mm-hmm. There's the little globe spinning and then little pins of light coming mm-hmm. out. You know, of each person practicing all yeah. around, right? And that light changes the entire universe, mm-hmm. you know, like changing yeah. that consciousness. And it's so, okay, you guys, I know I've gone deep here, but this is so good.
It's like the 100th monkey phenomenon, you yes. know, where they have just quickly for listeners that haven't heard this, there was two islands of monkeys and on one, they taught them how to use a tool mm-hmm. and then the monkeys would teach the other monkeys how to use the tool. And once it hit 100 monkeys, even though nobody taught the monkeys on the other island, there was enough of this information of how to use the tool in the collective consciousness that the monkeys on the other island discovered the tool and started using the tool yep. on their own, unprompted.
Yep. Yep.
And so consciousness got to a tipping point where then it was shared. And so if we are collectively working on a similar emotional experience or a similar aim, I guess, you know, restoring balance might be an aim, or how we can serve might be an aim, then if we get enough people doing it at the same time, it's going to tip into more than just the community right. that is practicing, which to right. me, I mean, like that's exceptional. And if we're looking at what the themes of astrology are, it's cyclical and it's all for our awakening and a reduction of our suffering. So we come back around to the same themes year after year, and every year we come back into it, we go deeper. Yep. And so, you know, it's like, it's in some ways, there's a service in the collective practice mm-hmm. for the collective mm-hmm. beyond the self.
So powerful, you guys. I hope you're getting this episode. So good. There's another, Sean Aker talks about the fireflies and how the fireflies, there's no way that they, it's the intelligence that the fireflies light up the swamp. And there's no way that they can collectively talk to another firefly on the other side and another swamp, but all of a sudden the other swamp is being lit up. And it's only from the collective consciousness of this one group. And then it sends out that conscious signal to the other fireflies. So this is, again, we've gone a little deep here. So we have the monkey example, we have the fireflies, right? We're talking about science here in that regard, but we're also talking about how we can start to change not only ourselves, but other women,
culture,
other people, mm-hmm. and this planet. Mm-hmm. Jana, oh, mm-hmm. so grateful for you. Thank you. You want to have people come to Instagram, Jana Romer, or you want them to go to your website, Jana Romer? Do you want them to go to Insight Time, or you want them to go to all three?
Whatever they want, wherever your tapping point is. So I do have my website. I blog every full and new moon, astrology wise. And then I put the practices on there as well.
Yep.
So it's just my name. And then Instagram. Instagram's an interesting place for me because I do share about astrology. I share a little bit about yoga nidra, but then I also share about like life. You know, I'm a mom. I'm pregnant with my second right now. Like, could give birth in any moment. Mm-hmm. I share not from a place where I'm like in it, but when I'm heal, like come back to my own wholeness with it, and really common. Deep experiences that I think, you know, so there's like a life. It's not lifestyle. It's like life. life. I'm not like by my pants. I'm like, hey, have you ever grieved? You know, like here's an experience of this. And I talk about my marriage. Even though my husband sometimes wishes I wouldn't. I always get approval of it first. But
keeping it real.
Just really keep it real. Yep, because
keeping it real.
I think that real conversations are what heal us. Yes. And so on Instagram, it's a more holistic kind of experience with me. And then Insight Timer is practices, you know? And if you don't have Insight Timer yet, I think it's such a fabulous app. A lot of the people that have trained with me are on there. So I actually, just the other day I was looking at like who's on there. And there's so many people that have trained with me or Tan is my teacher, mm-hmm. as well as others as well. But I can honestly vet a lot of teachers on there are well-trained, you know, you're on there. Yep. I haven't put up a new yoga nidra practice for quite some time and all my students are kicking my butt. They're all like higher rated and it makes me so happy to see actually. And they have courses so you can go deeper that way too. So
good.
The experience of it. And it's free.
Yeah.
So you can just go on and have a listen. And
yeah. Insight Timer, you guys. I talk about it all the time. Easy app to get. Ridiculously priced if you want to get a membership for the year.
Yeah.
But it's free. It's free. But make sure that you go hang out with Jana over on her Instagram. I love being able to follow her and watch her beautiful life unfold. And she's going to be having this baby. By the time this episode goes live, she will have this baby kicking around. So you'll be able to see the baby. Maybe, I don't know. Jana, thank you for being on this planet with me.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. You know what we should do? Is there a part in your podcast where there's like show notes where we could put one of the practices?
Yeah.
For your listeners? Yeah. Okay. So right before you publish.
Yeah.
Let me know and I'll give you a live link so everybody that's listening to this episode can get the current Astro Nidra for
yes.
a free download. Mm-hmm. And then you can try it out for yourself. So you can take a bite of the strawberry.
Yes. Take that bite of the strawberry.
Yeah.
It would be so juicy, you guys. You're going to be like, I want more of the strawberries. Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Jana. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
May you, my friend, bring something to your life that is so juicy, so delicious, and so light that you may be your best that you know how to be. Thank you for being with me and Jana today. Until next time, take good care. Thank you, my friend. Thank you for listening. Make sure to grab that free Yoga Nidra practice over at lanekennedy.com/free YN practice. Okay, take good care.